This is your friendly reminder that Vagrant Story doesn't love you very much. But that's okay, because we here at MageCast do. I'm your host, the well-read mage, aka Moses Norton. I'm a self-published author, editor, video game critic, and lover of language. And this is MageCast Podcast, a show about the appreciation of good conversation. MageCast is a pod for conversationalists about paving the way for longer, better discussions about games in a world where we've already stopped listening to each other. I'll chat with as many people as I can sit down in front of a mic. Vagrant Story, as mentioned, is our subject at hand this time. And with me to explain this oft-forsaken Squaresoft classic is Corey, the senior games editor at PopZara.com. Vagrant Story is really about gameplay, so that's where we spend a lot of our time, and hopefully that discussion will prove helpful to the many people who struggled with the game. Stick around, and you might just learn something. If you find that you enjoy the show, you can help support MageCast by visiting patreon.com/thewellreadmage to learn more about our crowdfunding campaign and how listener support impacts our content and fuels our goals for as little as $1 a month. Thank you very much, and now let's journey deep into the labyrinthine underbelly of ancient Laomond. All right, folks, welcome to another episode of MageCast. Today, I'm bringing back a special guest that we had before on the show, way back when we talked about Pokemon Sword and Shield. So would you please welcome Corey, the Infernal Accountant Mage. Welcome back, sir.
You know, I love how you did not say my last name, because it is hard to say. I'll do it for you. It's Corey Gallagher. Nice to meet you all.
Nice to meet you. Gallagher.
Gallagher. Yeah, exactly.
You know what? To TBH, I didn't know if you were okay with your last name out there.
Hey, I'm completely fine with it. I'm on PopZara.com on the well-read mage. I've been to E3 a couple times. If you guys know me, I'm so sorry for you.
Yeah.
But here I am.
Well, what's your social security number then?
Really high.
Really high. Like, yeah. Your IQ. That's great.
Exactly.
So you spurred out a little bit just there about who you are and what you do. Maybe you want to introduce yourself a little further and kind of tell us what you're playing now.
God, I love talking about me. Okay, yes. I am the senior games editor for PopZara, PopZara.com. We do video game reviews, book reviews, film reviews, music reviews, all kinds of reviews, and I'm mostly focused on the games myself. As for what I'm playing lately, I have honestly, like, this is going to shock you. There was a game called Mafia that came out around the early 2000s, I think, a PS2 game. Not an impressive game at the time, but it's kind of a GTA clone that happened to take place in the 30s. They released a definitive edition for it, I want to say a few days ago, and it's mind-blowing how much better it is. Like, it's really good. Like, if you have $40 or whatever to drop on this is absolutely worth your time for, like, GTA-style games at all. It's really good.
Wow, so it went from, like, 2 to 10.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it's really impressive. They did this with Saints Row the Third a few months ago, and it just really boggles my mind that, you know, usually they say remaster and they've upscaled the textures a little, but this time they've rebuilt the whole game, and it really shows.
Wow. And is this the kind of game that you would say you gravitate toward?
You know, honestly, as somebody who does a lot of game reviews, I find myself playing a lot of everything. The only real genres that I don't have a lot of familiarity with are sports games, because I'm just not that familiar with sports. And, you know, ordinarily I'd say racing games, but even the recent Need for Speed stuff has kind of played like an open world adventure sort of game, which I'm into. So, yeah, it's hard to find something I don't like.
And you are that guy that is always in the chat like, dude, we're living in the golden age right now, right? That's kind of your shtick.
Yeah, straight up, that's kind of my thing. You know, I am very strongly of the opinion that if the biggest thing you have to complain about with games is which store you buy them on, then you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
Yep.
What with the there's a lot of alarmism and dare I say fear mongering going around recently about the whole Bethesda purchase by Microsoft, but
I'm gonna take that and run with it, if you don't mind. Actually,
go ahead.
You
know, yeah,
I'm pretty sure Microsoft owns both Bethesda and Obsidian now, right?
You tell me on that one. I was gonna make the point. This doesn't really bother me because there's so much variety.
There's that, and it means that any of you that are complaining, I mean, all you're doing is complaining about Fallout New Vegas 2. So wait and see.
There you go. There you go. Definitive take on that.
Yep.
Well, this is episode 52 of MageCast, entitled Respect for Fairy Tales. We're talking today about Vagrant Story, which was developed and published by Square in 2000 for the PlayStation. Yep. By the way, a friendly reminder, every MageCast episode is a spoilers episode, whether we're talking about Tetris or Vagrant Story. So if you've not played this game and you're concerned about spoilers for a 20-year-old game, you should probably listen to a different episode or go and play the game and then come back and enjoy Corey's many wells of wisdom that he's going to have I know, about this game.
We'll see about that, won't we?
Yeah, we will. I mean, come on. I know how to not undersell you. Like, this is going to be great. All right, so we're going to start off with some mage facts. Okay, Vagrant Story is an interesting mix of genres. Director Yasumi Matsuno said they did not want to place the game within a specific genre, but instead attempted to create a new one.
Right, and that's interesting to me, too, because if I had to compare this game to any other game that's ever been released, you probably haven't played it because most people haven't. There's a game called Kadelka, and it came out in the PlayStation as well, and it is what I would call a survival horror RPG. It is where you are playing an RPG, but there are no shops, there's not really any currency, your resources are limited, and you have to learn to make do with what you have, and that perspective really reminds me of Vagrant Story a lot. It's a game where... We talked about this. You're given all the tools you need to finish any potential issue, but it's up to you to figure out how to use them.
Yes. And I actually did this past week, a week before, find some difficulty trying to explain to people what Vagrant Story is.
Right, right.
10, 15 years ago, I just would have said, yeah, it's a, you know, one of Square's JRPGs.
Yeah, it's just an action RPG, you know, whatever. Yeah. Now, it's interesting, too, to talk about Matsuno-san. He actually made a few games later on that are very similar to Vagrant Story. I guess in theme, if not in gameplay. Crimson Shroud, which is a really fantastic game on the 3DS that nobody, again, has ever played, much like Vagrant Story, much like Kadelka. But it's absolutely worth taking a look if you ever get the chance to. I'm not even sure if you can buy Crimson Shroud anymore, actually. Can you even buy games on the 3DS now?
You know, now that they closed the 3DS, you're asking the wrong guy. I'm always like, my hands are too big to play 3DS. I played like two 3DS games. So if there was a spider on the wall the size of my fist, I would have to move.
That's something that we mentioned before we started the show. Before we started the episode, I mentioned to Red that I was coming downstairs where I usually do my recording, and there was a spider the size of my fist. And let me assure you, while I am not a giant human being, I'm also not tiny. This spider was enormous. And on the one hand, I know that they are friendly creatures. They don't attack people. They tend to help deal with pests. But on the other hand, get off my wall. Thanks.
Yeah, especially a spider the size of Shelob. Yeah, that's crazy.
It's pretty big, pretty terrifying. Matsuno-san, we got to talk about him a bit more. It's very important because he's are very few games where his influence is quite as prominent as we see in Vagrant Story. He was definitely involved in Final Fantasy Tactics Advance, Tactics Ogre. Tactics Ogre is a big one. Tactics Ogre feels a lot like Vagrant Story when you play it. Again, Crimson Shroud, which you probably can't even buy anymore, so good luck with that. If you are a fan of Final Fantasy XIV, he was involved in both the newest expansions, Stormblood and Shadowbringers, so there you go.
Yeah, and I think, well, so I haven't played Crimson Shroud, obviously, but I have played Final Fantasy XIV. And sure. I do kind of think that there's this similarity of atmosphere, similarity of theme and tone to a lot of the games that that you've mentioned here.
Yeah, there's a very specific kind of feel to this one. I think it actually ties into our second mage fact, which is that Vagrant Story combines a lot of European religious and occult imagery with French architecture that the development team studied in Saint-Emilion in Bordeaux. Matsuno-san mentioned that one of the things he saw when he went to France to prepare for making this game was a wine cellar, like a big wine cellar kind of area, one of those giant labyrinthian ones in France.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've noticed, having played the game lately, that that's very relevant.
Right. The first area is
a giant wine cellar.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, again, that's really interesting. It kind of seeps into everything about the game. You know, it's a really gritty, brutal kind of game when you come down to it, but it also has all these trappings of like this elegance, this kind of high level imagery, like wine tasting, sommeliers, just really, there's a high level of elegance that doesn't really play out in the fact you're fighting these horrible monsters.
Yeah, it's almost like a Victorian high culture, a high society, fineries kind of thing.
Right, right.
I know exactly. It's hard to kind of put it into one word, but I know exactly what you're talking about. And I'm sure folks that have played Final Fantasy XIV or Tactics would kind of get that vibe as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that reminds me of that actually is the relatively more recent Bloodborne, which it combines this sense of, this elegance and this high class, imagery with just sheer brutality. It's kind of a twisted version of Victorian elegance.
Spot on. This next mage fact here says Vagrant Story was produced by Hironobu Sakaguchi and the team behind Final Fantasy Tactics. So again, explaining some of that familiarity.
And it's interesting too, because I feel like if you played the original release of both Final Fantasy Tactics and Vagrant Story, it might be harder to tell the similarities between the two of them. But if you go to the PSP re-release of Tactics, which is War of the Lions, and you play it then, yeah, no, it feels very, very similar. The writing, the translation, it's spot on. You can definitely tell. Likewise, I recently played a fair amount of Tactics Ogre on the PSP, and the similarities are just striking. It's very clear.
Really? That's interesting. So I've never played War of the Lions. I did play Tactics and Vagrant Story contemporaneously, so within a few years of each other at release. And I did kind of get that vibe. Again, Tactics kind of has that high society, those themes to it. There's the themes of the church and all of the political intrigue and assassinations and so on and so forth. And it seems like, yeah, there's a lot that's shared between these games, and that even goes further to something that you're about to mention here.
Yeah, absolutely. The next thing I'm about to mention actually is so the game never explicitly says this, and it only comes up through little references, and I believe at some point Sakaguchi-san actually said that this is not the case, but there are a whole lot of references suggesting that Vagrant Story is actually a game that takes place in Ivelisse. Is that who we decided to say it, Ivelisse?
Evilly, yeah, because I remember Balthier in Final Fantasy XII. And again, one of the benefits of the modern era, he's got voice acting, so we know. He says Ivelisse, as I recall.
Well, we'll go with that then. Vagrant Story, rather, is very likely, one way or the other, to have taken place in Ivelisse, which is the setting for Final Fantasy Tactics and Final Fantasy XII. We have suggestions, for instance, in some of the jewels that you find. There's an Aegreus jewel that you can use in your weapons. Later on, it actually references back to it. Final Fantasy XII contains a Leomond entity, which is the Dark Elemental.
Ah, and then as I saw today, there were references in Final Fantasy 14, evidently to things
Yes.
like Risk Breakers and stuff like that.
Absolutely.
So when we're talking about Vagrant Story in the context of Ivelisse, then you mentioned earlier that it's possibly been refuted by the developers, but is there a real connection, or is this just fan service, or is it's just references, you're saying?
I'm going to be honest, as somebody who absolutely loves this game, I'm going to cling to anything that gives me a thought that it might be part of something bigger instead of just a one shot that never is referenced again. So for my money, yeah, no, I feel like it's definitely like a connected kind of thing. Especially, again, if you play War of the Lions, the writing, the feel of the game is a complete turnaround from the original Final Fantasy Tactics, and it ends up feeling a lot like Vagrant Story.
Very interesting. Well, I what I did find is that this seems to be common knowledge. The people who were familiar with Vagrant Story were also familiar with its connections to Ivelisse. A couple folks even referred to this collection of games as the Ivelisse games or the Ivelisian games, however you want to say that. Also, every room in the game is named, as in the Beast Domain, Sinner's Corner. This is a tongue twister. Where weary riders rest, where weary riders rest, which
Where
I always
weary
thought,
riders rest.
Where
That is
weary
tough.
riders rest. Yeah, that's a tough one. Which I always liked about this game. It helps the navigation, so you're not like, this is room 2003, but you actually have these room names that there's a lot of rooms, and they came up with these unique names. I think it's just great, part of the flavor of Vagrant Story.
Oh yeah, absolutely. One of the things I love about this really, that really gets me going with Vagrant Story, is if you look at the map in a given area, the names tend to be connected to one another. For instance, there's a spot with a save point called it's called A Knight Sells His Sword. You then proceed to the next room to fight the boss. The boss room is called Sale of the Sword. It's great. I love that kind of thing. Like these little touches that people would not notice. And we're going to come back to this later when we talk about the gameplay and such. Like this is a game that offers a whole lot to the player, but it asks a lot in return. It doesn't give you these things on a platter.
I wholeheartedly agree, which seems to also fit in with this next mage fact.
I see that. Well, it's funny to have me saying it. Okay, this mage fact says here that Vagrant Story is way too hard, like the Dark Souls of Squaresoft. Now,
see, that's why I had you say it. So you know, I don't have funny, to say it.
It's the funniest thing, too. We're going to talk about this in a bit, but you know, I'll just knock it out now. My first experience playing Vagrant Story was renting it as a kid, back when you could do such a thing. In fact, I'm pretty sure you can still rent games, right? Anyway, rented it as a kid. I lived on a military base at the time, so games they had available for rental were not very common. The selection was not great, and I saw Vagrant Story, and I was like, Squaresoft, I love those guys, let's go. And I ran into the same wall that you've run into, several of the walls that you've run into in replaying the game for this episode. The Golem, mm-hmm. the Dark Elemental, yeah. They all just completely stopped my progress. So yeah, no, it's very difficult. And moreover, it's a game that doesn't necessarily care if you finish it. It is okay with you hitting a wall and stopping. Can you imagine that in today's era of games? A game that is that understands that you will not be able to win. Even Dark Souls gives you a hand here and there. Vagrant Story doesn't. Vagrant Story says, you know what? If you can't understand why you can't damage this boss, then you don't deserve to win. So that's it. You're done.
Vagrant Story is like, I'm too good for you, essentially.
Pretty much, yeah. I'm too good for this world. You cannot beat me. Sorry, go play something else.
Which explains why so many people haven't played it. So I like that you touched on when you first played it. When I first played it is I was became interested in it because I saw some screenshots in a magazine, can't remember which one, and I was like, this looks great. I already loved Final Fantasy. I already loved Square games. So this is one that I really looked forward to when it came out. I can't remember if I bought it outright. I think I did because I used to own it. Sure. And just jumped straight in, no visiting GameFAQs or NeoSeeker or any of those sites. If NeoSeeker is even still around, I don't know.
I'm not sure.
Yeah. But and I got thrashed. I got demolished. And I gave it the good old try several times. Dozens of times I've tried to beat this game. For this podcast, I tried it again. And I was like, I'm going to beat the game before the podcast. Spoilers, I didn't beat the game. I'm sorry.
Right.
I had like 4 days and I was like,
It's a tough game. Again, this is not a game that holds your hand at all. This game wants you to understand its features. And I think one of the biggest things, something you probably noticed yourself trying to beat it, is you can't level grind. Level grinding doesn't really do much for you. Like fighting monsters you don't have to fight isn't really helpful.
Okay, so now this is interesting, right? A lot of games, a lot of RPGs, even RPGs and games from this era, were really breakable in the sense that you could just abuse the systems. I was just talking with somebody today about Final Fantasy VIII. We all know Final Fantasy VIII, you could completely OP yourself well before.
And I'd almost say that's the point of Final Fantasy VIII, yeah.
Oh, and it's the point of Final Fantasy VIII.
Yeah, I would almost go so far as to say that understanding the systems inherent in Final Fantasy VIII is key to winning. And that is actually something it has in common with Vagrant Story. Final Fantasy VIII is beatable if you play like a standard RPG. If you just fight all the monsters and you level up and you, you know, interact with the systems at all, then you can get through it. And it, you know, it might be rough at times, but you'll do it. Vagrant Story goes the opposite direction. Vagrant Story says you need to understand the systems that we are giving you. And if you do, excuse me, if you engage with them in a literal, in an, you know, in an engaged kind of way, then you can get through. If you don't, you know, I'm sure you've seen this hundreds of times, you run into a boss, you cannot hit the boss, you cannot harm the boss, you will lose.
Yeah,
that's really interesting to me. Yeah, sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say absolutely. And you cannot, like you say, you can't grind your way through that. You can't draw magic your way through that. You can't.
Right.
You can't. I mean, Final Fantasy XII, there were all kinds of gambit abuses that I did where you just leave the system on all night fighting spawns and you come back the next morning, you got all this experience points.
You cannot
do stuff like that in Vagrant Story. You can't even, I mean, there's a lot of old school JRPGs where you could literally just mash A through the whole game. You cannot do that in Vagrant Story. You got to pay attention to chains and defenses and switching weapons and all that stuff. It's my opinion that the game is too hard, but it sounds like you're also kind of admitting that the game is challenging.
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. I'm right there with you. As I said, it's a game that has a whole lot to offer, but it definitely asks a lot of people who play it. And the number of games that do that, like even back in the day, there weren't very many of them. The only other ones I can think of would be the Saga games. For instance, Saga Frontier was another contemporary game at the time that I just loved because it does the same thing. The strategy guide for Saga Frontier came out, and it was wrong. It had numerous issues because the guy playing the game didn't fully understand the game. And that's amazing to me. This is a game offering you a world that you're allowed to step into, but you have to figure it out yourself. Or, I mean, you can read game facts, but, you know, who does that?
Right. I did, actually, for Vagrant Story this time. This is the first time... Yeah, of course. This is the first time I decided I'm going to use a guide. I'm not going to try and do a blind run through this game like all the
if
other
you,
previous
If you
times.
Want to see the plot, like, and you do, you want to see the plot. The plot is great. It's really well presented. The graphics are gorgeous for what they are. You're playing on real hardware, right?
I'm playing on PS3. So I don't have this on PS1. I'm just playing it off of the PSN store download.
I see. So one thing I want to mention, actually, talking about the presentation of the game... this is one of those games that is really well served by being emulated.
There's an interesting statement.
Right. And normally, you know, you wouldn't expect somebody to say this, you know, I love this game. It's one of my favorites, but you should probably play it on an emulator. And the reason for this is because Vagrant Story looks really, really good when it's upscaled.
Yeah.
Vagrant Story, when it's upscaled, could probably be on par with a PS2 game.
Yeah. It's a gorgeous game, and I'm glad you're bringing this up. We actually didn't have a spot where we were going to talk about the graphics, but like I said, I was impressed enough by pictures in a magazine to purchase this game for myself. It's still a gorgeous game. I mean, playing it today, I'm like, this looks fantastic.
Right, right. Yeah, no, it does a great job of really, like, presenting its world to you. Like, yeah, it's a really brutal kind of world where you're going to die a whole bunch, but you want to keep going. You want to see what's coming.
Right down to the color palette.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm somebody that cares about, like, these little details, and the fact that they'll have an entire room that's just shades of browns and greens is just gorgeous to me.
Yeah, no, it's really impressive, and it's interesting we could see all these great things about this game and then go back to... What Mr. Steve with the Outlaw said. I say Mr., we'll say, you know, whatever. Steve with the Outlaw here mentions, you know, he asks, why do you think the game failed? What effect did its failure have on subsequent Square projects? They add then that failure is a bit of a strong word. I mean, failed to reach mass appeal or to reach level of success that other Square projects did during that time. I think I was the only kid in my school that played it, but everybody knew Final Fantasy. Mm-hmm. Now, one point that I want to make about this is that this is a pretty common take on Vagrant Story, that it didn't do well or that it failed. This is actually not the case. It was one of the fifth best-selling Square games at the time that it was launched.
Really? In 2000, the same year that Final Fantasy IX came out, I want to say?
Yeah, and isn't that impressive? Final Fantasy IX comes out, and Vagrant Story still places like this. Wow. But at the time, you're also talking about, you know, this is the 1995 to 2000 or 2003 or so era where Square is just knocking it out of the park time and time and time and time again. Mm-hmm. So, you know, fifth is great, but this is Square, you know, if you know what I'm saying.
Right. It seems that, so I did look up just a little bit of research about how much sales and this game made and what its kind of contemporary reception was. It seemed to be really critically well received. But at the same time, it seems like now there's very much a mixed kind of take on this. I met a lot of people who were like, Vagrant Story, I love Vagrant Story. I met a person, like I was telling you, Corey, I met a person who named their child Ashley Riot, which is
I actually didn't catch that one. What was that?
No, so I thought I told you about this. I met on Twitter who named their child Ashley Riot. And their last name and then their last name, right? So as somebody who named their child pop culture reference, I'm like, that's great. And then at the same time, you've got folks saying, like, I hate this game. This game is overrated. I actually had two comments back to back, one saying the game is overrated and the other saying the game is underrated, which I think really just hits at kind of that mixed reception that Vagrant Story has had over the years.
And, you know, that really comes down to what we're talking about earlier, which is where this is a game that asks a whole lot of the player. And there's going to be two camps on that, and I really don't think there's anything wrong with either side. You know, some people want to sit down with the game at the end of the day after they've been at work or whatever they do, and they want the game to open itself up to them, to give them what they came for. If I paid $60 for a game, I deserve to see all of it. Mm-hmm. And that's fine. There is nothing wrong with that perspective. But the other perspective, which is the one that I tend to subscribe to, and that's one of the reasons I love this game so much, is that I am paying $60 for a puzzle box, and I want to spend my time and my effort figuring out how to open the puzzle box. That's the reason I like this game, I like Dark Souls, I like Bloodborne. It's all the same thing.
Yes, and I appreciate that about you right now. Dude, you're not moralizing. You're not soapboxing the fact that people approach games for different reasons. And there's a lot of that online, I think. There's a lot of people who are like, well, you don't like hard games, sissy. Or you like hard games, I guess you hate everybody else or something stupid like that.
No, there's no call for anything like that. You know, it's funny. I mentioned this every once in a while. A PC Gamer ran a review of a Monster Hunter expansion a while ago. And the guy who reviewed the game, he said, I don't know if I like this because when I kill the monsters, I feel bad about it.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of people, And a lot of people have said, you know, that's ridiculous. Why would I ever listen to you? And I'm going to go the other way. I'm going to say, if that is really legitimately how you feel, if it actually bothers you, then that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that whatsoever. However, in future, when I see your reviews, I will remember that you and I have such differing opinions on Monster Hunter that I'm not sure if I can really believe your opinions on future games. So you can think what you want, but so I'm also allowed to do the same.
Right. They're definitely, that's their entitled to their opinion phrase that gets batted around a lot, which they certainly are. Right. But then at the same time, if they review Monster Hunter Rise next year, you're going to be like, okay, you gave it a 2 because you don't like killing fantasy monsters.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll, if this same person reviews Monster Hunter Rise, I'll look at it and say, you know, I'm sure you probably felt the same way you did about this expansion. And you're free to feel that way, but it probably doesn't really apply to me. So I'll look elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. So you've expressed that you love this game quite a bit. It's my understanding that it's your favorite game of all time.
I will say it's a tie. I will say there are three games that I would say are my favorite.
Three-way tie? You're killing me.
I would say it's a three-way tie. The first is Vagrant Story. The second, second is Legend of Mana, which is the another Squaresoft game.
Yeah, PS1.
The third... For PS1, right. It actually came out around, maybe not around the San Antonio Vagrant Story, but definitely within the same era. Like, again, when Squaresoft was just knocking them out of the park, like, every year, it felt like.
Yeah.
The third is Tales of Majayal, which is a roguelike that I'm guessing a lot of people probably haven't played.
I haven't even heard of it. Tales of Majayal?
Yeah, it's fantastic. Definitely worth a look. Probably not worth a look if you're into, not into roguelikes, but trust me, it's great.
And that's not part of the Tales of series, looks like.
No.
Okay. Don't make that mistake.
But yeah, no, Vagrant Story is definitely one of my favorites. And again, what it comes down to is, you know, I used to write a column for you guys. It was called, what was it called? Years in Games, like that?
You expecting me to remember?
I don't remember. The point being, one of the things that I mentioned is a deep and abiding love for a game called Saga Frontier.
Uh-huh.
And I mentioned a bit ago, one of the things I loved about Saga Frontier is that I actually bought Saga Frontier with the strategy guide. And there were numerous things in Saga Frontier that the strategy guide did not mention because the person who wrote it didn't find them. Because it's that kind of game. Because it wants you to explore, to find things for yourself, to come to your own conclusions. And that's not as common these days. I mean, imagine a world where you play God of War, the recent remake of it, and you decide that Kratos isn't really interested in being a dad. And you can just do that. That's a thing you can do.
Mm.
Does that make it a better game necessarily? Not really, because it might take away from the narrative, but it's interesting that you could do it. Likewise, Vagrant Story. Vagrant Story presents a world to you and asks you, how are you going to get through this? But then it also allows for many of those options to be incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
If, you know, you talked about fighting the Dark Emerald earlier, right? And what's the initial way you tried to fight it? Like, you got stomped, right? What did you try to do?
Yeah, so a little bit on that. So we were talking about walls, right? The bosses.
Mm-hmm.
An early one is the Golem. And I think that most people, especially a lot of people I talked to, were just like, I couldn't get past the Golem, which is super early on. When I first played this game...
That's within an hour, right?
Yeah. When I played this game, I was like, I'm almost through this, right? Like, this is the last boss. Now I'm like, wow, that was like, I just turned this on. So anyway, I got to the Dark Elemental, and I was asking you for some advice. I did try it before I asked you advice. And so going in, I've got all my weapons set up, and I tried using, piercing first, then an edged weapon, then a blunt weapon. Didn't have really any good results with that. I tried Spirit Surge because I'm like, it's dark, this is light. Got a couple of those hits off, but it just hit so hard and so fast. I think the fact that I didn't have a very set plan in place to execute down to the second meant that it just wiped the floor with me. Easy.
Right. And that's the kind of thing that happens. You know, you came in with a plan and the plan didn't execute. So what did you do? You went looking for different plans. Like maybe you threw it out in the chat, but the fact of the matter is you went looking for a different option.
Right. And so the next time I went in with, what is it? A staff, a magician's staff, sure. to get the boost to your, you know, the magic attack and hit it for a lot more damage with a bunch of spirit surge spams. And that ended up being it. And then I pushed through with a couple other physical attacks. But he killed me like 4 times.
Yeah, no, it's definitely not an easy game. Mm-hmm. It's a game that, again, is not afraid to make you die, yeah. like to have you reload the game. A lot of modern games don't really do that. Even Dark Souls, you don't really necessarily die. You get put back to a checkpoint. Vagrant Story says, no, I'm sorry, reload your game.
Yeah, it's like continue or title. I'm like, continue makes you start outside of the room, right? No. Continue yeah, from no, your save point.
Reload your save.
Yeah.
And I'm not necessarily saying that's better game design. There's a whole lot of things in Vagrant Story that are unequivocally not good game design. I'm sure you have enough experience with the storage chest to tell me what's bad game design of Vagrant Story.
Yeah, well, you know what? Let's get into some pros and cons for a little bit. So sure. We've talked a lot about difficulty here. I'm sure we'll return to that theme. And then we did touch on, you know, the graphics are great. I agree that the story, at least what I've seen of it, is fantastic. I think the dialogue is great. It's like that when I say like Shakespearean language that can be beautiful if it's executed right. Otherwise, it's just kind of cumbersome. Like right. I want to say like Octopath Traveler was just kind of like cumbersome. But here, I think it's elegant, it's eloquent, it's nice. As far as a con, though, I would say the UI design is probably the biggest one. I don't yeah, know absolutely. Why there's like quick menu items with your L2. You could bring up mm-hmm. items, and you could bring up, you know, chains of defenses, your break arts, your magic, all that stuff. But I can't swap weapons or like gear sets.
You can't change weapons. I was waiting for it.
That's
yes,
the biggest one to me. Like I have to open up my inventory every single time.
Like let's go ahead and step back a minute for people who haven't played this game. Yes. Vagrant Story is a game that's all about using the right tools for the right situation. For instance, we talked about a golem. Very early in the game, you fight a giant stone golem. Thus far, you know, it's entirely possible that you've been fighting every enemy with the sword, the scimitar that you start with, yeah. and it's been fine. You fought a minotaur with it, you fought a dolahan with it, you fought bats, you fought wolves, and you've had no trouble. Then you hit this golem. If you try to hit the golem with your scimitar, you don't do any damage and you can't land a hit. What's the problem? The problem then is you got to think. You have to use your brain, which is something Vagrant Story loves to do. I mean, you can't cut a rock. It doesn't work. But if you try to smash a rock, like use a club, use a mace, you'll have better results. And that's what the game is in its way trying to teach you. If you see a golem, don't try to cut it. Don't try to pierce it. Use a mace. You'll have better luck. With the Dark Elemental, you know, this is a creature that doesn't really exist. But if you try magic, maybe you'll get somewhere. Mm-hmm. That kind of thing. And when we're talking about cons to the game, I think that might actually be one of them. I think modern games, for you know everything that can be said about them, they are really good about conveyance. Mm-hmm. If a game wants you to learn or to know something, it will do a great job of teaching you those things today. Even Dark Souls does it in its way. If you find a chest in Dark Souls and there's a bunch of blood puddles in front of it, you can probably guess what's going to happen when you open that chest. Vagrant Story doesn't tell you anything, and the chest just comes to life and kills you.
Right. There's literally a chest in a room I was in yesterday where there's a death trap right in front of the chest. I was like, are you kidding? Mm-hmm. It's invisible. How was I supposed to know that was there? What if I had, like, 50 HP? I'd be dead.
And at the point that you're at in the game, you don't even have an option to reveal the traps. Right. And that's another issue, too, is that I talk about how important it is that you have different tools for different scenarios, but Vagrant Story is real bad about giving you the tools you need when you need them. Mm-hmm. In particular, you have an Analyze spell. Analyze is the biggest way to beat this game. You will cast Analyze on your bosses, you will look at their stats, see what they do, adjust your strategy that way. You don't get Analyze like 4 bosses in, and it's rough.
Yeah. Now, do you consider Vagrant Story a survival game in that regard? There are all these tools, but they're also kind of scarce.
Right. Like I mentioned earlier, I would definitely call it like a survival horror RPG kind of thing. It's funny going back. You know, I can play it now with years of experience, having played it over and over and over and over again. I'm like, wow, that gives you way too much. Why would you ever die? But then, yeah, but then we go back and we're talking about, you find the Dark Elemental and you're like, I don't have enough mana restoration items. And I'm like, well, yeah, I mean, I guess if you don't know what's coming and you haven't played this game 1,000 times to know it by heart, then yeah, it would seem that way. And a lot of Resident Evil games are very, Resident Evil Silent Hill, very similar to that. You know, mm-hmm. once you know what you're doing, it feels like the game is too generous. But until you do, oof.
Yeah. So I also want to go back to what you were saying about the golem. It makes sense in real life, right? If you're fighting a rock monster, you're going to choose the sledgehammer and not, you know, the kitchen knife.
Sure.
Another thing you mentioned to me is silver weapons do extra damage to the undead. That also kind of makes sense, ties into pop culture history and all that.
Sure.
But the tough thing with Vagrant Story is that's not how these sorts of games, it's not how RPGs have worked historically. Sometimes, sure, but sometimes you could just equip a weapon on a character and then leave that weapon on them the whole dungeon. And so I really appreciate, it's almost like, to my mind, it's a pro Anacon, because I appreciate Vagrant Story's dedication to the details of reality. Like, hey, dude, you're fighting a rock. What are you doing wielding a sword, idiot? And then you die.
Right.
But at the same time, those things are so not intuitive. And there is, I went looking, there is a tutorial about a ton of its mechanics and systems embedded in the game's menu. It's also some of the
three
most,
or four levels down, right?
Right. It's also some of the densest reading I've ever done in my life. So I was like, I don't want to read this anymore.
And yeah, also that only really goes so far. You know, I can talk about the golem and how obviously you should use a club, idiot. And sure, that makes sense with the golem. But when we talk about the dark elemental, I mean, magic's not real.
Right. It's hard to make that inference then, yeah.
Yeah, like you're not going to leap to the conclusion that I should be using magic against a ghost because we don't actually have magic. So, you know, it works to a certain extent.
Right.
I'll call back to Dark Souls again. One of the first enemies you can fight in Dark Souls is a skeleton. If you have started a character with a sword, you're going to have a lot of trouble because the skeleton just doesn't care about your attacks. You might do damage, but he'll just attack through them. If you have a mace, you will rapidly discover that every hit you do makes him explode. He falls apart. Mm. And that's the kind of thing that Vagrant Story does really well when it's doing it well. Otherwise, it's like, hey, didn't you know to use magic on this ghost, idiot? Yeah. Haven't you ever cast a spell before?
And it was this.
No, you haven't.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, you haven't.
And it was the same thing. Vagrant Story also does that with the skeletons. I found out that blunt weapons are better against just bare naked skeletons, because that makes sense. Right. They're made of brittle bones, rather than like a piercing weapon, because if you try and pierce a skeleton, you're probably just going to go right through those bones.
Exactly. And that's the kind of thing I love. And I wish, you know, this game is probably one of the very few of its kind. And to some extent, I wish that there had been a sequel, because they could take these ideas and refine all them. You know, remove the things like, oh, you have to use this specific magic in this specific way and this specific enemy or you're going to die. Replaced with things like, oh, well, obviously you would use like a piercing weapon on a dragon to get past its scales.
And to say something in to the positive for Vagrant Story is I came away this playthrough just kind of realizing how modern a lot of Vagrant Story really does feel, despite some of the things that aren't just quite there yet. And I was talking to somebody that made that remark as well, that they thought that Vagrant Story is kind of on the cusp of a lot of really modern concepts, and it just wasn't quite there. It was just ahead of its time. And as much as I complained about the UI and the quick menu, I think that quick menu being there in and of itself is a very modern concept.
Absolutely, yeah. Vagrant Story understands what it's asking of you, and it really does its best to kind of give you the tools you need to give it, you know, to do what you need to do. At the same time, I think it's also hamstrung a bit by its hardware. Again, for those of you who haven't played it, you have to do a whole lot of inventory management. You have to use different weapons, different armors, and so on and so forth, but you have a limited amount of inventory space. So what do? You use storage crates, like in Resident Evil. Problem with this is Vagrant Story wants you to save the game every single time you make any interaction whatsoever with a storage crate. And this is a solid 10 to 15 second save because this is a PS1 memory card.
Yeah.
It's agonizing.
It is.
Yeah. I'm sure you've noticed. It's awful.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's even you're playing on PS3. It's even worse than original hardware. It's absolutely terrible.
Yeah.
So it's let down a bit by the hardware. But yeah, a lot of these concepts could be introduced in games today and be fine.
I mean, just imagine how smooth Vagrant Story would be with an autosave system.
An autosave system, or as you've mentioned, quick changing for your weapons, that'd be great. Yeah. Quick changing for
creating
armor, just
a
any
gear
number of
set.
Things.
I mean, that would be fantastic.
Right. And this is the game, kind of game that begs for it.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, let's move on here because we'll kind of retouch on some of these issues. But let's talk about story for a minute. I wonder if you could. It sounds like you've played through this game quite a few times, so I'm sure you can.
Sure.
If you could tell us a bit about the premise of the game, kind of what is Vagrant Story about?
So Vagrant Story follows a guy named Ashley Riot. He is a risk breaker, which I guess is basically comparable to an assassin. He works for the Valendian Knights of the Peace, the VKP, who obviously serve the Duke of Valendia. And what he is tasked to do during the course of the game is to go to a city called Le Monde, which is French for the world, and he is tasked to go and hunt down a terrorist named Sydney. Mm-hmm. Sydney has evil magic powers, and Le Monde as a city is known for being kind of a den of evil with villainous sorcery going on, so it's a dangerous place to be, but risk breakers are known for, you know, taking the risk, so he's sent to do it. Eventually, it comes out over the course of the game that the mission that you're given is a little bit more complicated than you might think, and there's more going on than you would expect, and maybe allegiances aren't what you think they should be. It's that kind of game. If you play Final Fantasy Tactics, you really have the idea there.
Yes. So there's a lot that I appreciate about this. I really always loved the whole, Sydney saying, "I am the heart, you are the hunter." You must have this great pursuit, and so at first you kind of think, okay, it's a cat and mouse sort of a thing, but it really does get more and more complex fairly quickly. You're introduced to all these other groups, these different knights, and you've got all these other side characters, and it's just all told through their dialogue. That it's quite fantastic.
It is, and unlike a lot of modern games, again, and I would almost call this a con, Vagrant Story kind of suffers for the lack of, like, a codex.
Yeah, that's spot on. I didn't even think about that until you said it.
Yeah, it's not like, say, Mass Effect or Dragon Age. You can't go back and check and see, like, what the VKP is or what a Riftbreaker is. You're meant to remember it. And it's one of those games that really asks for several playthroughs to really get a handle on what's going on because there's so many crosses and double crosses and so on. Yeah, it's rough.
Yeah. So do you have a favorite character in this game?
I am a really big fan of Mr. Rosencrantz, who I don't know if you've met him yet or not in your
Rosencrantz is that guy in like the pink jumpsuit, or it's an orange, and he's got like that thing in his mouth. It looks like a toothpick or something.
It's called a lip ring. We have those.
Oh, lip ring. For years I was like, what is that? I always thought it was a toothpick.
Yeah. You know, again, funny story, if you play the game in an upscaled resolution on an emulator, it's very clear.
Yeah, I bet it is, huh? I'm looking at a picture of him right now that's totally a lip ring.
So you're still playing through it. How much do you care about spoilers?
The game's 20 years old. Shame on me, right? Go ahead. Go ahead. Spoil away.
So, again, I've definitely been on podcasts before where I'm like, oh, have you played Jade Empire? And they just promptly drop the big twist of Jade Empire. I'm like, no!
Yeah, I mean, anyway. At least prep people, right? But, yeah, I mentioned it's a spoilers cast at the start of the show. So if folks are still listening, spoilers, okay? We're about to get into it. Go ahead.
The big thing with Vagrant Story is, as you mentioned, Sydney mentions early on that he is the heart, you are the hunter, you are being tested. The whole game is a test for Ashley to see if he is ready to inherit the power of darkness that Sydney possesses. Rosencrantz, my favorite character, is probably probably the most interesting because he disagrees. He thinks he should be the one to inherit it, and thus he is constantly trying to cause you problems every step of the way. And it's fascinating that he has this kind of desire for this when Ashley never wanted it. He never wanted this power. He never wanted this responsibility.
And Rosencrantz was a former risk breaker as well, right?
Right. And there is actually a fight against him where you'll notice that he uses a lot of similar abilities.
Mm-hmm. I did do one boss fight with him. He got away. Shucks. But I'll probably fight him again later.
As it goes.
I really always liked Sydney Lostorote. I think that
that his design is just fantastic. He's got those metal arms and these claws, but then he's got the bare flesh as well, and he has the sign of the Rood on his back.
You notice his back then? Okay.
Yeah. No, and that's from theological study. I recognize that. As far as the game telling me what it means, I haven't been that far yet. But I think Sydney makes a big impression on the player early, when Ashley shoots him through the heart and he gets up and pulls it out, pulls that bolt out, and is just like,
right,
cool. And I was like,
yeah,
oh no,
it's totally fine.
Yeah.
And it's interesting too, because the next thing you mentioned on the notes here is the atmosphere of the game. And I think that's the kind of thing that really drives home just how grim this is. You know, everybody has, everybody talks in this highfalutin Shakespearean cant, but in fact, I mean, this is really dirty business. I mean, you're fighting people, killing them. They come back to life as corpses. You kill the corpses. People get shot. They get back up. There's gore everywhere. I mean, it is, held back by its hardware, but the fact of the matter is, this is a really dark game, especially by Square standards at the time.
Yeah, and I think there's similarities there with Final Fantasy Tactics as well, if you bear with me.
Yeah.
Tactics has a lot of fairly dark themes in it. You know, there's assassination and the intrigue and heresy and a lot of characters perishing and the occult and all sorts of things. But Final Fantasy Tactics looks a heck of a lot more cartoony than Vagrant Story does. Vagrant Story has these fully realized human, well, much more human-shaped characters than Final Fantasy Tactics does. And I remember, I was still pretty young, and I remember when I first saw that opening sequence with the encounter with Sydney and all that, that I was just kind of floored at how dark and how adult this seemed.
Yeah, absolutely. One point I wanted to mention, actually, that I haven't yet. So you actually watched the introductory scene, right? You played through it?
Oh, yeah, several times.
Would you believe you can skip that?
Yeah, you can press start right through it, right?
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I love to talk about when I talk about games, both on Popzara and on Well Read Mage, is it takes a whole lot of confidence in the quality of their work for a developer to put things into a game that the player doesn't have to do. I would say that the best parts of any given game are going to be the side quests. We have differing opinions on Final Fantasy XV, but I will say, you know, I'll put this down. If you play straight through Final Fantasy XV, it's a solid 10 to 15 hour game, uh-huh, and it's not that impressive. That is because all the best parts of Final Fantasy XV are side quests. They're the things that you do not have to do. And think about that. These developers took the most impressive parts of their game, and you can skip them. All that money, all that time, all those resources, and you don't have to do them. Vagrant Story, entire significant portion of the game, and you can just press start, go right past it.
Yeah, now, I might blow your mind. I'm going to agree with you about Final Fantasy XV. I do think that the game would be extremely unremarkable if you just blew straight through it and just did that story. I don't think that Final Fantasy XV is really about the story. I find that a lot of people really loved Final Fantasy XV because of the experience of being in the game and being with the characters as if you yourself,
right,
were hanging out with friends. And you don't get that if you're just going to rush through it and finish it in 10 hours. But you're definitely going to get that if you take the time to explore the world with those friends and beat side quests with those friends. But that's an interesting point that you made.
Right. And it's, again, that's the kind of thing I love in games. I love, you know, you have made a world. You have invited me into it, but all the doors aren't open. I'll have to figure out how to do that myself. Mm.
All right, well, let's return to more gameplay discussion. I'll have to be honest. Vagrant Story is a game about gameplay. As good as the story is, I rarely run into anybody who, one, talks Vagrant Story at all, but most all the discussions about Vagrant Story center on its gameplay. Gameplay, sure, as it turns out, was also a big kind of sticking point with a lot of folks. So there's a couple of statements here from Slide Bob on Twitter, who say the gameplay from Parasite Eve, it reminded him of Parasite Eve. Ident Invalid said, I know virtually nothing about this game, and it's the comparison to Parasite Eve's battle system that even makes me want to bother. How much does it have in common? So there's a question for you.
Sure, absolutely. So if you haven't played Parasite Eve, and hilariously enough, it's actually probably closer to what you would think of when I said that something is a survival horror RPG.
Oh, yeah.
Parasite Eve was based on an old horror book from Japan, and it plays out like Resident Evil with a JRPG battle system, which is really interesting. I think the reason they mention that the combat is similar is because they both have the same system where when you want to attack, you push a button and a sphere expands out from your character that shows your attack range.
Yes. At a visual level, that's definitely a major similarity.
And I wouldn't be surprised if these two games were being developed around the same time and probably took some cues from each other. Mm. In practice, I wouldn't say they're especially similar. Vagrant Story is kind of a turn-based system, but it's definitely a lot faster paced than Parasite Eve. Vagrant Story does some very strange things with its combat, and I'm sure we'll get to that in a moment. But I don't think they're especially similar. So if you're looking for a game like Parasite Eve, unfortunately, I really don't think there are many that are like that first Parasite Eve game. If I were to compare Vagrant Story to anything, maybe Quest 64, strangely enough.
All right, so you're going to have to...
That sounds awful, doesn't it?
You're going to have to explain that one.
Absolutely. Quest 64 had a similar concept, where similar to some degree, where you would set up an attack, and that would, you know, emit your attack range, you decide when to attack, and you could dodge attacks otherwise outside of that in kind of a real-time system. And again, even then, I can't really compare Vagrant Story to it, because Vagrant Story doesn't have that kind of real-time dodging. What it does have, I guess we'll go on about weapons and combat first, these comments, and we'll talk about that then.
Sure. So getting into weapons and combat, again, a lot of questions on this. Duct Tape Plays, sure. How about that combat? Ape Jaunty, this is one of those games I pop in every once in a while. Cool graphics, awesome story. Then the battle system happens, and I'm like, this sucks. And then I turn it off. Cash Cat 90s, and I greatly empathize with this, said, I could never beat Vagrant Story even as an adult. I don't even know what I did wrong, but I eventually got to a point where I was doing one damage to everything. Cinco Play said, going to retry Vagrant Story soon. I want to like it, but three times as a kid I reached the crab boss, and three times I couldn't damage him. Presumably I didn't upgrade my weapons correctly in that convoluted system, and I rage quit. Yeah, and I empathize with these a lot.
Well, you know what? Single Play died three times to the crab boss. I'm going to give you three hints to ensure that you can get through Vagrant Story. The first one that I'm going to tell you is that very early on in the game, you get the spell Analyze. The game doesn't tell you this. It gives you the spell and doesn't tell you how it works. You cast Analyze on an enemy, and what it does is when you go into your status menu, you'll see Ashley Riot's status, which obviously you know, you made that character, he's yours. But you can also use the shoulder buttons, or it might be the directional keys, one or the other, to switch to the enemy who cast Analyze on and see their status. And that leads me to point number two, which is if you ever find that you cannot harm an enemy, enemies have three defenses. The first one is the element of the enemy. If you're fighting a fire dragon, it's a fire enemy. If you're fighting an earth dragon, it's an earth enemy. If you're fighting a ghost, it's either dark or light, depending on the ghost. So check with Analyze and then you'll know. The second is the class of the enemy. If you're fighting a dragon, it's obviously a dragon. If you're fighting a goblin or an ogre, it counts as human. If you're fighting a ghost, then it's a phantom. If you're fighting a demon, it's evil. The third is the type of attack that you're doing. So maybe you've got a sword, that's slashing damage, or edge damage. I think it's what it's called in Vagrant Story.
Right.
If you're using a spear, that's piercing damage. And if you're using a club, that's blunt damage. Now, if you want to be able to beat any given enemy, I told you the same thing in the chat before, you probably want to beat two of those three. If I'm fighting a fire dragon, I can win by using a water weapon that's good against dragons and is piercing. If I can use a water weapon that is piercing, I'll probably win. If I have a dragon weapon that's piercing, I'll probably win. If I have a water weapon that's good against dragons, I'll probably win. If you can beat two of those three, and you know all three conditions because you cast Analyze first, you're going to win. Does this always hold true? Not necessarily. There are some weird bosses. You fought the Dark Elemental earlier. That boss really wants you to beat that second condition. You need to know its element, and you need to attack its element. Mm-hmm. But generally speaking, that one will get you through. And if it doesn't, here's my third hint, and everybody can beat Vagrant Story. Everybody. Anyone can beat Vagrant Story if you use this tip right here.
Now, hang on, hold up, before we get to the big secret of how everybody can beat Vagrant Story.
talk about podcasting for a tiny bit. If you ever wanted to start your own podcast, I bet you have. I bet you have a pretty cool idea. And you know what? The world needs more podcasts with cool ideas. At Magecast, I recommend using Buzzsprout to host your show. They have tons of resources available, and Buzzsprout makes podcasting a heck of a lot simpler. So why not start a podcast today? Check out the affiliate link in this episode's description to sign up for Buzzsprout yourself. If you sign up for a paid plan through this link, you can net a $20 Amazon gift card as a bonus, plus you'll be helping to support this show. So seize the day, sign up today.
So here's the thing. As you play the game, you will unlock the ability to do chain combos when you attack. It's very similar to like the timed hits from Mario RPG. You attack, you press a button at the right time, you attack again, and you can keep doing this forever. You pay for it by gaining in risk, which is basically a mechanic that reduces your attack rate and increases the damage that you take, which is usually bad. Here's the thing. If you do these enough, you gain practice with them, and you can unlock new ones. You'll eventually unlock one called Crimson Pain, and a later one called Raging Ache. Crimson Pain does additional damage, and does damage back to you. Raging Ache does damage based on how low your health is. It doesn't care about defense. It just goes right through everything, anything, any enemy, doesn't matter. Raging Ache by itself will win this game for you. You don't need to know anything else. If you can get Raging Ache, you can beat Vagrant Story.
I'm going to get it.
That's simple.
I'm going to get it. I checked after you told me that. And I didn't have that one yet. However, what you recommended was going back to one of the training dummies that's scattered throughout the game and kind of grinding on it with a weapon until you're able to unlock that specific chain. So before you kind of move on from there, there's a lot of information that you drop that's really like key, right? So you've got the class, the affinity, and the type for the enemy. And then you've got your risk that goes up. That's a difficult... it's one of the things that I really like about this game, though. So you cannot just sort of spam brute force your way past enemies, or you're going to find eventually, bosses especially, you're going to find eventually that you're just missing everything. And sometimes, even if your risk is zero, you're only getting, 70% chance of hitting, 56%, 42% chance of hitting. And that'll just go down and down and down the more that you spam your chains and your attacks. Another thing that you brought up was sort of that timing mechanism. I'm so glad that you mentioned Mario RPG, because that was one of the things that made me happy to see that in this game, that they have that timing element. But it is such a small window. It's tiny.
It's very small. And it changes based on the weapon you're using, as I'm sure you know.
Yes. And it changes based on the type of enemy attack that's coming against you, too. So if a dragon's like, well, I'm going to do fire breath on you, you have no idea almost when that tiny window appears when you can use a defense chain.
Absolutely. One of my favorite parts about Vagrant Story, and I'm going to spoil a tiny bit for you again. The final boss, the most powerful attack of the final boss, is a classic Squaresoft era big cinematic attack. The timing window for when you want to block this attack is a dramatic zoom on your face right before it hits
what?
You. It's great.
Well, no, I appreciate that spoiler, because then I'll be able to keep my eye out for it.
Yeah, you'll know it when it's coming. Oh, other thing I forgot to mention, if I had to mention a fourth tip, you want to keep your weapons up to date, but you don't need to worry too much about it. Vagrant Story gets kind of a bad rap for having a really complicated equipment system. But in fact, it's really not that bad. You want to keep an edge weapon, you want to keep a piercing weapon, you want to keep a blunt weapon. And if you're not going to go and do the super hard like mega bosses and that are in the post game, that's all you need. An edge weapon, a piercing weapon, a blunt weapon, maybe a staff for casting spells. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Because that kind of covers all the basics for the weapon types.
Exactly. And if you can get the weapon types and then either the enemy's type or the enemy's element, you're good to go. It's two of the three.
Okay, question. Can you have a weapon that's good against every class of enemies? So like the human, beast, undead, phantom, dragon, evil?
Theoretically, that's possible, absolutely. But one problem with the idea of doing that is that when you attack a certain enemy, there's a pretty fair chance you'll gain affinity against that enemy. If I take my sword and I smack a dragon with it, it might become a sword that's better at hitting dragons. However, in turn, there's also a pretty good chance it'll become worse at doing something else.
Ah, I see. So hence having these very specialized weapons. So as when I was reading, and I used two guides simultaneously, sir. I was not going to take any kind of chances. Because huh? I think I mentioned to you as well, you know, I pull up Game Facts, and this game's old, so there's a ton of facts on this, and I'm like, which one do I use? Yep. So I just ended up using the two top-rated ones simultaneously, and they kind of gave slightly different information, which I appreciated. But one guide was adamant. Like, when you picked up your first spear, they're like, we are going to make this our dragon-fighting spear, just so you know. When you pick up your first axe, we are going to make this our beast-fighting axe, just so you know. The difficulty with that that I kind of found over time is you can only carry 8 weapons at a time.
Yep.
So
yeah, you sure can.
So that means that you could only, if you've got it perfect, where you've got, you know, one human, one beast, one undead, one phantom, one dragon, one evil weapon, then that's great. But with all of these separate specialized weapons, every time you pick up a weapon, you're not going to have space for it. You could disassemble it and take the parts apart. But that inventory management is real tight on Vagrant Story. If you're somebody listening that you don't like inventory management, this is probably not the game for you. I'm going to say probably not the game for you. But because it's so tight, you have to be very careful, I think, about what you're doing with your weapons.
That's absolutely true, yeah. And eventually, like I said, when you get toward the end of the game or into the post game, then yeah, you probably do want to at least try and specialize things a little bit. Incidentally, that's what those training dummies are for that you mentioned a bit ago. Mm-hmm. But there's even cute little touches based on this. Have you ever... So there's an option in your options menu that if you turn it on, will show you when the affinity of your equipment changes.
I didn't know that existed.
It sure does. You should turn it on immediately next time you play. Now, here's the cool thing about that. One thing you probably did not know, you cast the heal spell a lot, right?
Yeah.
Heal spell is a light spell. You cast heal on yourself, as you cast healing on yourself, you are becoming worse and worse and worse and worse at dealing with darkness. Now, why do you think you had such trouble with that darkness elemental?
Because I'm casting heal on myself.
Because you're casting heal on yourself and making yourself weak to darkness.
Okay, wait, I'm taking notes now. So you said options. Go to the options, turn that thing on for when the affinity changes.
Yeah, and it'll pop in the lower left corner. I would say that another con to this game's design is that that is not on by default. It really should
it
be.
It definitely should be. Yeah. I think that would, if that was on by default, that would tend to, it seems like early on, try to get players to think in terms of, hey, there's types, there's elements, there's affinities that you need to be aware of.
Yeah, absolutely. And going back more to the atmosphere of the game, this is actually one of the things I really love about Vagrant Story, just from a conceptual perspective. It's this idea that, like, you know, maybe I got this fancy new phone, and the new phone has new features, and it's really fast, and it can do this cool stuff, but I still kind of love my old phone. My old phone's gotten me through a lot. I've done a lot with it. I've taken it places. I've taken a lot of pictures. We've done a lot of things together. In a way, my old phone is still more connected to me than the new one. It doesn't necessarily mean it's stronger from a, you know, technical perspective, but from a sense of sentiment. That's important, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what this whole system is all about. It's the sentiment you build with your gear. It's, you know, I used this spear to defeat this dragon. Future dragons should watch out for this spear. I've used this axe to fight so many beasts that I know it's good against beasts, and knowing that makes it better. It's this idea of like heirlooms, like, you know, something that was passed down to me from my grandfather may not be as fancy as something new, but it's special. It's special. It's better.
Yeah. And it's great, too, that those traits that are attached to specific weapons don't time out. And what I mean by that is, you know, you don't pick up a better weapon down the road and then have to just necessarily chuck that previous weapon away. The game has a fairly intense crafting system, I would say. But part of that crafting system is the ability to combine your gear together and therefore kind of carry those traits into the next generation of weapons, which I think is fantastic. So that allows you to take that if you've got, you know, your dragon spear that you don't want to get rid of, combine it with a better spear to get an even better spear and carry over those dragon, those anti-dragon affinities.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's funny. I can go back. The first sword you start with is named Fandango.
Mm-hmm.
I remember because not because the game says it, not because it's a specially good sword, but because it's a special sword. It's the one you started with. It's the one you'll use. It's important because it's yours. Mm.
And that, in a sense, is at a meta level. Why I think you and I are endeared toward Vagrant Story so much. This is not a really popular game. It's a game that I would feel is mine in some sense. You know, I was the one who purchased it. I was the one who played it all those ages ago. And I feel that affinity towards it as well.
I'm sure you do. And I'm sure you have just sticking to a gaming perspective, I'm sure you have a specific controller you prefer using. I'm sure that you have a specific mouse or keyboard you like more than others. Mm-hmm. Even if, you know, you could go out and buy something that was necessarily better from a technical perspective right now, it wouldn't really be better because it wouldn't be yours. That's what the game is trying to tell you.
Wisely said. To move on here to a couple more audience statements. This is from Rhett Podcast, who said, if you could change or improve any part of the game for a remake, what would it be? For me, the menu system is incredibly clunky, and I think a more streamlined UI would make it a far more pleasant experience. In that same vein, Ragnow VGM said, some camera placement in-game, even if it wasn't too bad for a game of that era. Some spells take ages to cast, too, and spell animation tends to get stuck sometimes. So let me ask you then, would you be excited to see a remake for Vagrant Story? And what is the one thing that you would love them to change for the remake?
Well, absolutely. I'd love to see a remake. Again, like even emulating the game makes it look a lot better, but I feel like the gameplay still holds up today. However, I'm going to be right there with Rep Podcast on what the biggest thing I'd change would be. Quick menus for weapons. You mentioned gear sets. I hadn't even thought about that, but that would be amazing. To some extent, I feel like a little bit of the difficulty of Vagrant Story, once you know what you're doing, is the fact that it is a giant pain in the butt to have to go through menus. Like, if I have specific armor that I want to use against a specific enemy, you know, maybe I'll just take those extra points of damage because I don't have to surf through all the menus to get it
right,
out.
Right, right,
you know?
Right. You're going through three or four menu clicks just to access that one piece of armor that you want to switch specifically. And then on top of that, there's an animation, especially if you're switching weapons. So it takes a while to switch gear.
It does, absolutely. So fixing that would be great. And, you know, obviously the modern consoles they have SSDs. It's not even a question. No. Responding to what, Ragnow VGM mentions, camera placement in game. On the one hand, I'm kind of with that. On the other, I definitely prefer Vagrant Story's style of camera as opposed to like Resident Evil, because there's very few occasions, at least in my experience, that you get attacked by an enemy and don't know where it came from. Maybe you've had a different experience.
No, I would agree with that. The only area where I couldn't see what I was doing was in the Snowfly Forest, but that's because there's
trees and
the canopy. It's unique to that area, so far in my experience, at least. But I like...
Yeah, that's the only other area of the game.
Oh, okay. So yeah. I don't think that's too big of a problem. What I do like about Vagrant Story's camera is you kind of get this very isometric view. Everything's squares and square tiles in Vagrant Story. Right. And so when you turn the camera, you're turning on a very specific degree. So you're not, you know, just turning slightly. And then also, thank goodness, I mean, I would prefer this over... and like he said, you know, it wasn't too bad for that for a game from that era. But I would vastly prefer this camera over, say, the camera system that they were using in like Super Mario 64, where it's following behind you and you're having to kind of constantly change it. In a game where it's a fixed camera, like you said, in Resident Evil, and you just kind of can't really see because you're at the far end of a hallway.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that kind of thing is a giant pain in the butt. It really doesn't add much to the game. So I mean, if there were a remake, I feel like it'd be something akin to the Final Fantasy VII remake, which would just revamp how everything looks, at which point, you know, we'd have other things to talk about. One other point that Ragnar mentions is that spell effects take a long time and spell animations tend to get stuck sometimes. Here's the thing with that. Have you noticed, you've been playing, have you noticed that your character kind of charges up before they do anything? They hold out their hand and they suck in particles.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that is the game. That's the game disguising loading access. And,
definitely.
In a modern remake or whatever, a Vagrant Story, I feel like that would definitely not be the case. But at the time, you know, they had this entire catalog of animations. And unlike most games, they all had to be available at once, which would be really rough on the PS1. And thus, they had to do something, and here it is. You know, I feel like almost as much as the Golem boss fight, this is what turns people off of Vagrant Story. The fact that it takes forever to use a healing potion.
Yeah, it does take a while. So this is something that doesn't bother me too much personally. But then again, my favorite game of all time, Chrono Trigger, does not switch to a battle screen when you encounter an enemy, as you know.
Right.
So there's a small, a very brief kind of freeze as the game loads the battle. Without there being a transition screen that would previously mask that loading. And sometimes people ask me, well, what would you fix in Chrono Trigger? And my snarky answer is nothing. But the real technical answer is I would get rid of that second of loading time. In Vagrant Story, it's exacerbated, I think, because, you know, now you're talking about 3D graphics and these very flashy, bright animations. So it's just that much more kind of in your face, but I don't think it's too huge of an issue.
But say, you know, I'm definitely used to it by now since I've played the game so many times, but I can understand if you're new to Vagrant Story, like the fact that you can't just drink a potion. He has to hold the potion out, draw in energy from the surroundings for a good 5 or 6 seconds. Then there's an animation and he has to pose while he drinks it. And then the health pops up. Just not. That's a lot. Like, let's tone that down.
It is a lot. So remake or remaster? Which one would you prefer?
So I'm going to break away from what I think is what most of the mage Discord chat thinks. And I'm going to say that I really liked what was done, generally speaking, with the FF7 remake in terms of just presenting to me a new take on the game. Do I think it was perfect? No, I think it was a little bit too linear. I think they could have done a lot with expanding things a bit. But if the same thing happened with Vagrant Story, where we, you know, if we took out some of the more ridiculous aspects of the customization. For instance, I think they could probably remove armor and be fine. Straight up.
Oh, from Vagrant Story, really?
I think we could get rid of the entire armor system. I think there's more than enough to go around with the weapons. Just keep the weapon system, drop armor altogether, drop maybe even accessories, or maybe keep accessories anyway. That's just adding like a fifth layer of complexity we don't really need. It's making the game take too long, and that's fine. For all that I say that I love about older games, one of the things I really like about modern games is their respect toward the player's time. Generally speaking, like, modern games really appreciate that you probably only have so much time to play them, and they streamline things. Vagrant Story could do with a lot of streamlining.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think, too, that I want to put a comma in that. So I agree with you that I think modern games have sections that you can play that are a little more bite-sized. There are more frequent save points. I'm kind of baffled at like how few save points and how infrequent the workshops are. I mean, they're hugely spread out from each other. And that's crucial because that's your chance to upgrade your character, because there's no experience points or leveling system. It's all your stats are based on the equipment. Something like that, it's almost like you have to play Vagrant Story in these broad sweeps because the save points are so far from each other. I mean, you don't have a save point right in front of a boss. You have a save point several rooms down the way, and then you have to plow through these enemies to get to that boss. Even right after a boss, sometimes there's no save point, which frightens me dramatically. Whereas in a...
That's
yeah,
it.
That...
But that's it right there. That is it exactly. That is why there's not a save point in front of a boss. You don't really strike me as the kind of person who really like the Dark Souls games, right? You haven't played them, I assume.
No, so I have not, and the reason is because if I did, then I'd have to compare them to everything. So
absolutely. So I'm going to go back to them again because I'm a game journalist. That's what we do.
Oh, no.
Exactly. How does it feel to you when you've gone this long session, you know, maybe being on the brink of death several times, fighting a boss maybe even, and just barely scraping by with just enough resources to keep going, and then you find that save point? How does that feel?
Well, it's relieving, and there's a combination of emotions. I told you earlier, after I reached the workshop where I could finally work on the Hagane metal, I breathed a long sigh of relief because that feels like a sense of safety. There's no townsfolk to interact with. There's no item shops that you can kind of have a breather in. There's barely any space to breathe in Vagrant Story, except for these save points and at a larger scale, these workshops. So I felt this huge sigh of relief, but I think it's that terror beforehand that is really part of the excitement.
Sure, absolutely. And I feel like that's, you know, does it really hold up today given the inconvenience that you experience as a result of there being so few save points and they're so far spread out? That's really hard to say. Dark Souls, again, does a great job of this by having levels that curve in on themselves. So you'll reach a new area and pull in a lever and, oh, that bookshelf moved aside and it's actually a shortcut back to the last save point. How convenient. I've made progress. I feel good about myself. Vagrant Story doesn't really do that. Vagrant Story is like, you are on your own until you find this next workshop or this next save point, and that means it's up to you to ration everything that you have to make sure you can get there.
Yeah. A lot of folks talk about some games that really emphasize an atmosphere of isolation. Super Metroid pops up a lot. Vagrant Story is top in my mind as far as games that really emphasize that sense of you're on your own, deal with it. This massive city, these huge underground ruins that are crawling with the undead, and you're one guy. You don't have party members. You just have your wits and your weapons, and that's it. And another thing that I wanted to just briefly return to was that whole comparison between sort of the retro games and the modern games and this idea of wasting time. And so I think while you have to play Vagrant Story in these long chunks, and if you die, you've wasted a lot of time. It seems like wasting time in the modern sense has changed, though, because you're not really doing these broad sweeps. You've got auto saves. You've got a lot of conveniences that help you to be able to play the games in shorter bursts. So side quests was something you mentioned earlier about Final Fantasy 15. Side quests in Final Fantasy 7 Remake were ones that I typically found underwhelming, but because you could play those in an isolated form, you could play just that chunk of side quest itself. That's a short bout that you can finish and say, okay, I've had progression. I'm not at risk of losing that progression. And so in that sense, while I would call a lot of those, this is my comma, while I would call a lot of those side quests filler, finding the cat and crap like that, at the same time, I would say that the overall structure of the game respects my time more than Vagrant Story, because I'm not be at risk of having to do the crappy cat quest over again, because it's a small burst of experience rather than this broad sweeping chunk that I have to take care of in Vagrant Story.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And again, like, that's definitely something that modern games have really latched onto and done a better job of. I will go a different direction, though, and ask you this. When you're playing Final Fantasy VII Remake or any other modern RPG, progression to you feels like watching numbers going up. Isn't that right? Like, you know, I've gained a level. I'm level 21, not 20 now. I'm a better character.
Yeah, well, that's an interesting question. I think it's sometimes related to the narrative if it's paced well, but I would agree with you. I think that a lot of times we attach progression to a number in RPGs.
Sure, but in Vagrant Story, I'm sure you've noticed, you don't level up, and whatever permanent stat boosts you gain are very small.
Yeah, you beat a boss and it's like, hey, your intelligence went up by one.
You're and like, you know, what? some people say, hey, you should reload and fight the boss over and over again until you get intelligence plus four, and I'm like, no, that's, you're missing the point.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine doing that.
Yeah, and that's an interesting point about Vagrant Story as well, is that the Ashley Riot that goes into Leomon and the Ashley Riot that comes out at the end, the latter is a little stronger, But it definitely doesn't feel like you're a god. You could still be killed by the stuff that's in Leomond. You have won because you're smart, because you've used what was given to you. And one other point I want to mention, you fought the Earth Dragon recently, and the boss right after that one, how did it feel to have a party member for the only time in the game?
Yeah, oh, so that is the only time, and that's great. No, that's wonderful to know, because I took extreme advantage, rather, of that. Having Sydney on your party member as a friendly, I loved it because I was like, I don't have to rely on myself casting Prestasia or whatever it was, or heal on myself. Whereas again, you feel just completely alone the whole time.
Like, it presents a whole different example of the gameplay to you. Like, this is how much easier would it be if Ashley would just like work with people? In fact, at the very start of the game, he even speaks to Kaio and says, "No, you don't have any combat experience. I don't want to help. I don't want you helping me. Go away."
Yeah, very much the action hero in that sense. He does it to himself. Then the game's harder because of Ashley. Yeah. So we talked a lot about demands on players. We talked a lot about difficulty, save points, the inventory, crafting. We talked about the attack timing. One thing that always kind of surprises me about Vagrant Story that I forget about is these little cube pushing puzzles. It's like a running gag with myself. I'm like, every game has to have a cube pushing puzzle. And I'm a little frustrated by these, but at the same time, they're so short. And then I kind of wonder why they're there at all then, if they're so short. But a couple things on that is, when I first played this, I was thrilled that you could jump, which kind of tells you about the era that this game came out in. And then another thing is how the development team really wanted to kind of attempt to mix all these genres together. And so earlier in this podcast, you compared Vagrant Story as a whole to kind of this puzzle that you have to solve. And I vehemently agree with that. That's super true. But at a smaller scale, on the microcosm, you have these little room puzzles where sometimes you'll enter a room and there's a timer and you're like, oh, crap, what do I do? Kill all the enemies, get to the end of the room. Or there'll be a cube puzzle that you have to stack all these cubes in order to reach higher ground.
You know, it's funny that you mentioned this because we're going to go back to the settings menu again. Did you know that there is an option in the settings menu that lets you redo the cube puzzles and it times you and you are graded based on your performance?
I did not know that. I don't think I knew that. So what are you talking about? You can, if you finish a cube puzzle, you can redo it and then get a higher score?
You can go back into the room, you can redo the cube puzzle. In fact, sometimes I think they're different and it will give you a score based on how you did.
Wow. Now I didn't know that. I don't know who would take advantage of that, but
it's buried in the options menu. You would never know if you didn't look. That is absolutely a thing.
Wow. Did this game come with a manual? It had to.
It did. It came with a very thick manual.
Yeah. Do you still have it, the original copy?
I don't, unfortunately. Man. I definitely have an original copy of Vagrant Story sitting around, but I do not have the manual anymore.
Ah. Yeah, I don't have my original.
Or do I? I might. Hard to say. It's been a while.
Yeah.
Regarding the cube puzzles in particular, isn't it weird? You know, every time I go back and play them, they hit me by surprise too. It's like, oh yeah, you got to play Sokoban sometimes. I guess that's a thing.
It is weird because you're totally thinking about the combat. I got to get my weapons set and all this stuff, and then it hits you with a cube puzzle, and you're like, wait, what?
Because it doesn't feel anything like the rest of the game. Like, how strange is that? There's even there's platforming later. There's actual platforming in Vagrant Story. That's the reason you can jump. And on the one hand, I appreciate the effort to really cram in everything they could into this game. This is a very, very dense game. Mm-hmm. Like, one playthrough will maybe take you, I guess, 15 hours if you know what you're doing. But in terms of, like, everything you can do in the game, nah, you'll be there for a while. And it includes things like weird cube puzzles and maxing out your points of the cube puzzles and doing these platforming challenges and so on. It's nuts.
It is nuts. So on top of all the content that you can get through one playthrough, something that I've consistently heard about, read about, heard from you, is there's post-game content. Now, what is that? You play through the game again, it's New Game Plus, or what are we looking at?
So, again, we'll go ahead and spoil something. You noted the thing on Sydney's back.
Mm-hmm.
It's the Rood symbol, right?
Yes.
That symbol is called the Rood Inverse. And when you play through the game the second time, you have the Rood Inverse. And there is a significant portion of the game that is unlocked by the Root Inverse when you have it.
Okay, now when you say significant portion of the game, you can spoil this for me. When you say significant portion of the game, what do you mean? I mean, are there extra dungeons? Are you replaying dungeons with more enemies?
Both. There are big chunks of mini dungeons that just aren't unlocked without the Root Inverse. And there's a whole secret dungeon called the Iron Maiden that's unlocked when you have it.
Oh, that's a foreboding name.
Yeah, it's real. Like, when I was saying, until you get the post-game content, don't worry too much about leveling up your weapons the right way. Yeah, that's when you have to do it. It's okay. Real, real nasty.
So how much harder is it than your first run-through?
The early parts of it are probably doable with whatever you use to beat the final boss. Later on, that is definitely not the case. You'll have to specialize.
I see. I see.
Yeah.
Well, something to look forward to, I guess.
And, you know, talking about content, there's little things that you might never notice. You probably use specific weapons, right? Like, you probably have a sword, a rapier, a spear, right?
Mm-hmm.
As you defeat enemies, you get what are called break arts, which are these little special attacks that I found them pretty underwhelming myself. They're usually not very good. They eat your HP and they do a special attack to the enemy, and it's very flashy looking, and usually you're not very impressed by the damage, but hey, that animation was great, etc.
Yeah, I kind of treat them as like desperation attacks in a way.
Yeah, yeah. I think they're that. The other intended use is that they can attack types of damage that you wouldn't normally have. I think one of the sword ones does blood damage, for instance.
Oh, okay.
Here's the thing. Did you know that there are some that are usable by, if you fight barehanded? If you kill enemies barehanded, you learn a whole different set of break arts for using your fists.
I didn't know that, no.
And there's no reason you would have ever thought so. The game gives you no inclination to think that that would be the case, but if you do it, you get break arts for fighting barehanded, and they're great.
Okay, so fighting barehanded, that's got to be blunt, right? Or does it completely ignore any of that?
Fighting barehanded is blunt damage.
Okay, and you could... Could you beat the game just doing barehanded? I mean, are there barehanded runs on this?
You would have to cheese a little bit using that Crimson Pain thing or a Raging Egg thing I was talking about, but it's theoretically possible, sure.
Wow. Lots to look forward to. So I'm going to try my darndest to finish this game for the first time. I've gotten further than I've ever been. There's no reason for me to give up now. If I hit a wall of walls, then that's it. I don't think I'm going to complete the post-game content. But who knows? I might. I'm still in love with this game. I still enjoy it. It's still very hard. Maybe gave me 6 or 7 game overs. And you said I'm about a third-ish through the game.
Ish. I mean, I think you're a little bit further than the last time we talked about that. So you're probably half-ish at this point.
Okay. And I'm in the blue ruins right after you fight the Dark Elemental. Kind of exploring that area. So half-ish. I'll take half-ish.
Yeah, you're making progress.
That sounds great.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into some final audience questions here. And by the way, if you want to ask a question or share a comment to get a mention on the show, then you'll need to keep an eye out on my Twitter at The Well-Read Mage, where I announce the topics for each MageCast episode in advance. Or if you don't have Twitter or you hate it, you can email me at thewellreadmage@gmail.com. I am pleased, though, to announce the topic for our next episode, so you can start thinking about those things that'll land you a mention on the show. Next episode, we're going to be talking about Dragon Quest / Dragon Warrior 1, the first one, which I got to play for the first time fairly recently. So I'm looking forward to that discussion. I hope you are as well. A couple of final questions here, though. This is from Aros Elric, who said, if you were to make Risk Breaker a class in Final Fantasy, what would you include in it, i.e. weapons, armor, spells, and abilities? Interesting question.
Absolutely it is, though I'm going to respond by saying that I feel like the Freelancer class that already exists in like Final Fantasy V and such is the great example of the Riftbreaker. It's the class that can use and do everything, and if you want to be Vagrant Sword, that's what you have to do.
That's interesting. I was thinking along the lines of something that's sort of like a high-risk, high-reward kind of a thing. Maybe things that can do large chains or lots of damage, but there's a high opportunity for missing. Or you could do more damage over time, but your accuracy would go down, something like that.
That's a great concept, too. Absolutely.
I don't know exactly how they'd work that into a Final Fantasy, but it would definitely be a melee sort of class, I would say.
Oh yeah, no question. There are crossbows in Vagrant Story, but I'm sure you've noticed there.
Yeah, and in previous playthroughs, I latched on to that first crossbow that you get. Can't remember what it's called because I'm not using it this time, because I'm not an idiot. But in previous,
it's called the Seventh Heaven. By the way, this is how much I love Vagrant Story.
Ah, there you go. the first several times through, I'm like, oh, but the range is fantastic. I could shoot people from standing on top of a platform. It ends up not being a weapon that you could, you know, use to carry yourself through the game at all.
Right.
And then the second part of Eros Elric's question here is, as far as Squaresoft's wild hero hairstyles go, should Ashley Riot's multi-antenna hairdo make a comeback in JRPGs?
So I'm going to be real here. As much as I love Ashley's hair, I think the best hair we've ever seen in a Squaresoft game would be Saz's from Final Fantasy X, and everybody should have that hair.
With a chocobo in it. Oh, no, wait.
Exactly.
You said Saz, right? From 13?
Yes. 13, sorry. I said 10 initially. Yeah, no, 13. Yeah, no, that guy was great.
Yeah, and I would keep a chocobo in my hair. That sounds great.
Who wouldn't?
I would argue that Brave Fencer Musashi had fantastic hair from...
And it was antenna-style hair, too, wasn't it? So that's pretty good.
Yeah, he had that one sort of his bangs that were like one spike that came down and you could like impale people with it. That's hair that's
a
weapon.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Another question here, this from Winstolf, who asked, which boss was your favorite? And why was it the twitchy ogre lad in the mask? So a favorite boss...
So to talk about the twitchy ogre, there is one point in Vagrant Story, you are just wandering through an underground mine, you think you're safe, because I guess it's early enough in the game you haven't realized that you're never safe yet. You walk into a room, there is this horrific, like, if you've seen The Ring with the twitchy ghost, it's an ogre that acts like that, just twitches over the place, ends up behind you, and probably murders you because he resists all your combo attacks. You can't actually hit him. That kind of thing is great. If I had to pick a single boss that was my favorite, there's a boss toward the end of the game. It's a giant four-armed statue, very relevant to the plot. It's very cool. That's definitely worth a look. I love the boss fight where you have Sydney on your party because there's nothing else like it in the game. Mm-hmm. And the final boss is amazing. Like, I really hope you can make it to the end because it's wonderful.
I'm so looking forward to that. I just wanted to echo what you were saying about the twitchy ogre lad. He's also naked, except for the mask, so yep. That's a little disarming. I always enjoyed the... So I want to give props to the golem boss. I think that's one of the better golem designs in fantasy games. I particularly enjoy the ribbon or the straps of leather that it has over its eyes. It almost looks like it's being imprisoned or tortured by merely being alive. But I think that the standing armor bosses are really cool. Dullahan, and I can't remember the name of like the Dark Knight or whatever, that Grissom, I think it was Grissom, in that fight with Sydney, right? He summons kind of a standing armor sidekick. And I just like how those look. They look great.
That's pretty great, yeah.
And final question here, this from The Clinch, who asks, is AJ Durai a real person? If so, who is he or she? I don't really know how to approach this, but I will say I totally forgot that AJ Durai was in this. And I asked this person and they were like, yeah, they're right at the beginning of the game. They give you some narration.
So, you know, funny enough, we talked about how this is an Ivalice game. Do you recall a character in Final Fantasy Tactics named Aurum? He was an astrologer. He used a spell that stopped everybody on the field. He was super broken.
Oh, yeah, I do.
AJ Durai is his descendant. This is actually one of the reasons that we think this is an Ivalice game. Araslam Durai is the person who wrote the Durai report mentioned at the start of Final Fantasy Tactics, and it's the same person mentioned at the start of Vagrant Story.
Right. So to that mind, that clinches it right there, the clinch, that Durai is a figure that's shared between these games, a medieval sort of evolution historian who tells us some information in Vagrant Story and some information in Final Fantasy Tactics. Same guy.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, we don't know exactly when the time frame was. I know that obviously Vagrant Story takes place after Final Fantasy Tactics, and it's very likely that FF12 takes place after Vagrant Story. But we can guess that probably 20-25 years before Vagrant Story takes place is when that intro prologue bit takes place. With that particular quote.
Okay, I see. So in the chats beforehand, you told me that you believe that Vagrant Story is in the far-flung future, sort of, or in the future at the very least, from those other games. Now, what's the kind of the reference for that? It couldn't have been contemporaneous or previous. It had to be in the future.
I'm not entirely certain as to when Vagrant Story takes place relevant to FF12, but I can say with pretty strong confidence that this is sequel to FF Tactics. That's for numerous reasons. We see, for instance, Agrius, the Holy Knight from FF Tactics. She's mentioned as kind of a mythological figure in Vagrant Story. Darai is mentioned. He is one of the descendants of Aram Darai, who showed up in Final Fantasy Tactics. Was burned at the stake eventually, by the way, if you didn't know.
I didn't know. Poor guy.
Yeah, which I don't know how the hell that happened. The guy is overpowered.
Was it Aram Darai or Arazlem Darai that was burned at the stake?
Arazlem Darai is the one who wrote the intro to Vagrant Story, who is a descendant of Aram Darai, who was burned at the stake after the events of Final Fantasy Tactics. But, you know, I'm sure you've played that game, you know, that pretty much everybody of note is dead by the end.
Yeah,
so.
It's a bleak story.
It's pretty dark, all things considered. So is Vagrant Story, really. But yeah, between those two, my guess is that it goes Final Fantasy Tactics, then Vagrant Story, then FF12, just because all the technology in FF12 is very advanced, if I had to guess. There's also strong indications that Final Fantasy XIV is involved in some way, but then that would mean that Final Fantasy XIV is also involved with, like, Nier, and that means that all the Final Fantasy games are kind of... Yeah, no, we're not going to get into that.
No. Well, you know what? I did just think of one potential tie to the relationship between Tactics and Vagrant Story and their placement on a potential timeline, which is the revelation of who Saint Ajora was in Tactics. Sort of this venerated Christ-like saint figure who was apparently, you know, this holy person, but Tactics deals with you kind of blowing over all of these lies that have been perpetrated by the religious organizations and the political organizations of the time. And so you find out that they're not backed by God and his righteousness. They're backed by these dark entities. Now, in Vagrant Story, it seems like that's already set in stone. The dark, as they refer to it, is this thing. And there's some confusion with some of these knights as, you know, I serve God. And they're like, you actually serve the dark. I think it's Rosencrantz himself that says, the dark you mean, not God. I think that there's that element of this has already been an established concept in Vagrant Story. And that could have potentially have been in Tactics.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. There's other tie-ins too, for instance. The cult that Sydney is part of in Vagrant Story is called Muhlenkamp. And that refers to the lady who founded Leomon, the city where the Vagrant Story takes place. She was a dancer priestess from about 250 years ago. Muhlenkamp shows up in 12, and I believe she also shows up in 14 in references. So you see a lot of these kind of things, specifically Evil East style games. Like, there's a lot of interesting content if you're willing to keep your eyes open.
Oh my gosh. You just explained a lifelong mystery for me, too. And it almost made its way into the title of this episode. I was batting around naming this episode, yeah, but why a belly dancer? Because every time I turn on that that title screen animation, you turn the game on, rather, there's like a belly dancer right there that's just, you know, dancing, and there's dragons and there's weapons and stuff like that.
That's Muhlenkamp.
I never knew that! Oh, wow.
Well, it mostly doesn't tell you, so yeah, no surprise.
Completely makes sense now. Completely makes sense. One thing I would want to note on that you touched on was the technology, the sort of higher technology that's in 12. I think it's interesting that in Tactics, there are archaeologists that are sort of uncovering this high technology from the past. And, you know, like there's an ancient robot that comes to life and things like that. So I wonder if you've kind of got 12 Tactics, Vagrant Story in this timeline. I wish they'd put out some official statement.
Hey, you know, there was a period, actually, I want to say around the turn of the decade, back in 2010 or so, where they were doing what's called the Evilise Alliance, where they were actually trying to make a whole bunch of Evilise-themed games. Let's see that happen again. I'm all for it.
Definitely. All for that as well. Well, I think we've reached the end of this episode, though. Corey, I want to thank you so much for this conversation. It's not every day that I get to talk to anybody who even knows what Vagrant Story is. Never mind have an hour and a half long conversation with them. But would you be so good as to let our listeners know where they can find you?
Yeah, absolutely. I review pretty much everything that comes out on Popzara, popzara.com. I also do some reviews every now and then for the Well-Read Mage. The next one that's coming up is Bounty Battle, which is a game you probably shouldn't play.
How's that for a sell?
Yep.
Harder to sell than Vagrant Story?
You know, I would have to try pretty good. You know, if they put Ashley Ryde in, I'd buy it anyway, but...
Oh, there you go. Well, thanks a lot. I appreciate your time, and we'll catch you next time.
Hey, thank you.
Hey, thanks so much for listening. Don't forget you can support the show by visiting patreon.com/thewellreadmage, or you can also support myself as an artist and writer by checking out my designs on sale at TeePublic or my novella at Amazon. Links, of course, are in the description for you. Do check out Corey's Vagrant Story review as well. As you caught from this episode, he truly understands not just the mechanics behind the game, but the minds behind their intent. That's all for this time, and if you're tempted to beat Vagrant Story yourself, then I wish you luck, Risk Breaker. Obviously, I'm still trying to do that myself. This episode may be over, but the legend will live on, passed down by the dwarves, the elves, and the dragons.
Hey, you. Yeah, you. You ever wonder what it means to be a good person, or how we can ever be sure we know anything? Whether the world we see around us is even real? And do you also enjoy computer games? Well, then Philosophy Raga is the podcast for you. Each episode, I take a look at an idea from philosophy and explain it using video games as a lens. It's a Philosophy 101 course cleverly disguised as a lighthearted show about gaming, or a very silly show about gaming attempting to masquerade as an academic production. Available wherever you get your podcasts, Philosophy Raga is part of the Little Fella Media podcast network and the Well-Read Mage family of podcasts. So join me to have a good time and maybe even learn some stuff. That's Philosophy Raga, the video games and philosophy podcast.